You're listening to the Diplomats podcast on Asian geopolitics. As always, I'm your host, Ankit Panda, recording today in Washington, D.C.
And I'm your co-host, Katie Putz, also recording in Washington, D.C.
Hey, Katie, how's it going?
Going pretty good. How are you?
Good. Looking forward to our second podcast for this month. We're turning our attention back to Central Asia today. Just a few days ago, we had Chinese leader Xi Jinping meet with his Central Asian counterparts in the second Central Asia summit, which took place in Kazakhstan. And there's a lot to dig into here, and I think it'll be a good way to kind of take stock of how China sees this region on its periphery, how China-Russia dynamics are playing out in Central Asia today, and what, if anything, our listeners should be looking out for longer term. But maybe the place to kick off here is, first of all, can you tell us a little bit about where this summit process came from? Like, how did this originate? And what primarily is the purpose here?
Yeah, so this is the second Central Asia-China summit. The first took place 2 years ago in Xi'an, China, and it was a very large and lavish event. There was a red carpet. It was very dramatic, as these things go. And it really was an interesting sort of marker of the development of the relationship between China and the Central Asian governments. Listeners will be well aware that the Central Asian governments meet with various world leaders, usually in this sort of, the United States calls it the C5 plus one format, which is effectively, you know, the five Central Asian states plus one, some other country. When it comes to the United States, which started that process in 2015, it has almost always been at the foreign minister level. And that's a format that they actually borrowed. I think the Japanese were the first to do this back in like 2004, have these sort of lower level, not quite at the leader level. China brought this up to sort of a leader level. And what was remarkable about the first one in 2023 was, you know, it took place also in the summer. And then a couple months later, U.S. President Joe Biden at the time met with the five Central Asian presidents on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly that year. And that was sort of a comparable leader level meeting, though certainly did not have the heft of this. This was a very big performance in a way. And so this is the first time this meeting has taken place in Central Asia. They've settled on a biannual meeting every other year, as opposed to twice a year, a biannual format for this. So the next summit is expected in 2027 in China. And so it seems that they have worked on institutionalizing this in a way that this doesn't exist really for other countries in quite the same way. But there are some other countries. In April, the two presidents of the EU were also in Kazakhstan for a Central Asia EU summit. And so this is a format that plenty of countries are using, but China certainly brings a certain heft to the room.
Yeah, so, you know, we've talked about this before on this podcast, but there's been this really interesting dynamic playing out between China and Russia in Central Asia post-February 2022 and the Ukraine conflict and the economic and social implications for many of the Central Asian countries. So putting that into context, do we see evidence from this latest summit that China is aware of those Russian sensitivities regarding kind of the inroads that it's making in Central Asia? And how are the Central Asian states now thinking about managing these two major powers that are in proximity to their region?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question, right? I think when we look at the outcomes of this summit, one thing that caught my eye is that the six leaders signed a treaty on, quote, eternal good neighborliness, friendship, and cooperation.
Good vibes.
Good vibes only is sort of the theme. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen the text of this agreement, so I don't know what's in it really, other than what the Chinese and the Central Asian governments say is in it. And this quote from a Chinese readout caught me. You know, it said, the countries reaffirmed their firm support for each country's independence, sovereignty, territorial integrity, as well as the principles of sovereign equality and the inviolability of borders. Now, obviously, reading that in the current geopolitical context, it's hard not to see shades of the Ukraine war in that. But I do want to mention that this sort of trifecta of independence, sovereignty, territorial integrity appeared back in early 2020 when the first Trump administration actually unveiled its Central Asia strategy. It was referred to me as sort of the Holy Trinity by a U.S. Diplomat at the time. Independence, sovereignty, and territorial integrity. These are the things that Central Asia wants from all of its partners. That commitment pops up in a lot of places. And so, you know, I think we can very much tie that to this relationship between Central Asia and Russia, which is complex, to say the least. But the fact that sort of this is the central part of China's engagement with Central Asia is respect for these things, or at least on paper respect for these things. I'm sure people can sort of dicker about how far that respect will go. But it does underscore the Central Asian interests. And then another sort of aspect of this, one of the other sort of concrete outcomes of this summit were the inauguration of three what they called cooperation centers focused on poverty reduction, educational exchange, and desertification. As well as a smooth trade cooperation platform. I don't really know what they mean by cooperation centers, but when it comes down to these topics, you know, we can see sort of clear Chinese attention to areas that Central Asian governments want to work on. And it's also worth noting that these are areas that the U.S. is very much turning away from with sort of the effective end of foreign aid as we knew it, you know, the almost full banning of issuing visas to Turkmen citizens that occurred recently. There's also a threat that Kyrgyzstan will get added to the visa ban list. And so in that context, plus the looming possibility of greater tariffs, you know, Liberation Day for all of that together really sets up a real easy way for China to engage in the region. And so that's sort of the US end of it. When we get to the Russia end, you know, it is really remarkable that, you know, the same week that this summit was happening, Russia was hosting the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, mm-hmm. which is not quite the star show it used to be. But none of the Central Asian presidents went to that. And clearly, like, they can't be in two places at once. But, you know, I think it is, there is a clear sort of divergence here, and there's a lot more to say on the China-Russia relationship for certain.
So is the scheduling there just a coincidence, or was this something that I imagine the China Central Asia Summit was scheduled before the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum?
You know, I'm not certain. From the top of my head, I don't know when exactly these things always occur. The Central Asia China Summit 2 years ago was about this time.
Yeah.
And I think the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum has been longer running, is also about this time.
Right.
But one of the things that I was remembering about it is in 2022, so a couple months after the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, Kazakh President Tokayev went to the St. Petersburg International Forum, and he was on stage next to Putin when a Russian journalist asked him, you know, about the Ukraine situation, you know, whether Kazakhstan would recognize Donetsk and Luhansk as sort of these independent republics that Russia wanted. And Tokayev said no. He laid out Kazakhstan's very diplomatically laid out their rationale for not recognizing these territories, referred to them as quasi-state associations, and sort of lumped them in with Kosovo, Taiwan, Abkhazia, South Ossetia, and sort of said, we don't recognize any of those. So, you know, of course we're not going to, but that was an interesting point of divergence, and sort of illustrated some of the ways in which Kazakhstan and the other Central Asian countries sort of try to carve out a little space in their relationship with Russia while maintaining it.
Yeah. So going back to the US-China dynamic for just a quick minute, you know, right now I think it's fair to say Central Asia is extremely peripheral in how the Trump administration is thinking about Asia and the world more generally. And then you've just pointed out, you know, the Trump administration has also just handed China these huge kind of narrative wins in Central Asia that just kind of fell into their lap and appear to have been influential here. Looking ahead, I mean, do you think that the U.S. is going to take an interest in this region? I mean, you know, you talked about the travel bans, from everything from like strategic relevance, people-to-people ties, economic ties. Everything is just kind of on the down and down when it comes to the U.S. Central Asia dynamic. So is this just kind of China making hay as the U.S. kind of approaches this region with, I guess, not even disarray anymore, it's just almost total disinterest to active, I guess, contempt on some of these issues, particularly the travel bans?
Yeah, I mean, I think when the most cynical response, which sometimes I feel is very warranted, is that the United States has never really cared about Central Asia and isn't going to start now.
Yeah.
I'm not always that cynical, and I think there has been space for better relationships. And there are certainly efforts on the part of especially Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. So a couple of weeks ago, there was a really large Uzbek delegation that came through Washington. The Uzbekistan has cooperated with the United States in deporting Central Asians back to Central Asia. Like, they paid for an entire plane to send a bunch of, like, about 100 Central Asians back to Central Asia who had been illegal immigrants in the United States. And so there are these sort of places where they are cooperating. I do think some of the biggest damage is going to be on the societal level. You know, obviously there is a divergence between what political elites in these countries in Central Asia want and care about and need in their relationships, and then what the public views about certain external partners. And so I think this is definitely damaging the US's reputation, particularly the travel bans. You know, I talked to some Turkmen, I've talked to Kyrgyz about this. And this is definitely some clear wins for China. You know, if China can expand educational opportunities for Central Asians, they're going to take them up on that. If they can sort of work on poverty reduction, which is usually not like a top line item in these things, but that was a top line item, that's a thing that's going to get go a long way. China has a little bit of an uphill battle. There have been several surveys and a lot of scholars who have done work on just the fact that there is a sort of latent Sinophobia in Central Asia, a sort of distaste of working with China and suspicions about China's motives in the region on that public level. At the elite political level, they'll work with anybody. And so these deals are pretty good for them. And so I think we'll have to see how that goes with the United States, but it doesn't look good when you start sort of banning students from coming to the United States when that used to be sort of a high accolade to get.
Yeah. Okay. So before we close it out for today, Katie, I want to go back briefly to the China-Russia dynamic, and this is kind of beyond the summit. So Kazakhstan just announced that Rosatom, Russia's state nuclear energy agency, will be building the country's first nuclear power plant. Which was then followed by an announcement about China potentially building a second plant. What does that tell us about these dynamics? And, you know, is this sort of a case in point about these tricky Russia-China dynamics in Central Asia?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a really interesting series of events. So for listeners who may not recall, Kazakhstan had a referendum last October on whether to build a nuclear power plant or not. It was very controversial. It passed, of course. And then that was followed by the president saying, you know, we're going to seek to put together an international consortium, because one of the international concerns was like, oh, Russia's just going to come build this thing. That was what everybody assumed then. And that is ultimately what I think is going to happen. And so it was announced last week that Rosatom is going to build the first nuclear power plant. And then almost immediately there were comments from Kazakh officials saying, we're looking at China to build the second one. And then this is an interesting quote that I saw earlier today. The first deputy prime minister of Kazakhstan, in a comment to journalists, admitted that the second nuclear power plant, which is expected to be built by China, could be built earlier than the first, which would make it the first. And I found this sort of phrasing really interesting, because part of the problem, right, is that Russia and China have different capabilities at this present moment. They both have the expertise to build a nuclear power plant. They both have the China certainly has more of the materials ready on hand than Russia. Russia has more constraints because of the war in Ukraine. And so it was really interesting phrasing to me to see it put that way, that, you know, maybe the second one will be built first, because this sort of triggers a little bit of a race. I don't think anybody's really thinking this is a race, but there is this dynamic between Russia and China where they are, you know, equal partners in Central Asia and in the world. But everybody knows who is the most equal partner in that relationship, right? We know who the senior partner in the Russia-China relationship is, and it's not Russia. But China, to its credit in that relationship, doesn't bring that up. You know, gives Putin the respect that he thinks he deserves, treats Russia as an equal partner, even though we all know they're not. And so I'm going to be watching this process really carefully, because I think it's going to tell us something about that relationship, how quickly these things go. You know, I guess it is possible that the international consortium for both of these could end up being Russia and China. But it's hard to imagine, for example, a South Korean company and a French company, which were the other two sort of bidders on this process, partnering with Russia and China on a nuclear power plant in Kazakhstan. I don't think that will come together, but I think it says something interesting about not just where these countries want their relationships to be, but which partners have the capabilities to deliver in sort of effective ways. And I think China is the answer. China can actually probably build this. Russia, we'll have to see. It again has a lot more constraints on its capabilities, given its sort of adventurism.
All right. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much, Katie. I think it's great to have an opportunity to revisit Central Asia with the peg of this recent summit. I think, really interesting dynamics playing out between Russia and China, as I guess the U.S. is sort of absent at the wheel when it comes to the region now. But thanks a lot for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. And for listeners, if you like what you heard on the podcast, make sure you subscribe so you can catch up with future episodes. And if you have subscribed but you haven't yet left us a review, please do that. We really appreciate that. Helps us grow our audience here. And if you have feedback for either of us on topics you'd like to see covered or anything else, reach out to us. You can do that on social media or by email. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back soon with more.